The Shining Wizards podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. Opinions expressed by the host and guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the podcast or its affiliates. Content may include adult language or themes and is not suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
The following is a presentation of the Shining Wizards Network, broadcasting live in high-definition video and available on all podcasting and streaming platforms. Follow us on social media at Wizards Podcast. Check out our merchandise at merch.shiningwizards.com. Do your Amazon shopping at amazon.shiningwizards.com. And become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast. And now, it's time for the Shining Wizards.
This is the Triple X Sex Express, Sexy Eddie. Whether I'm beating my meat, or whether I'm eating my meat, or I could even be on an all-vagina diet, that's all bush and all tush. But when I'm done doing all that, you know what I'm doing. I'm watching the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. Rock out with your cock out.
All right, it is episode 758 of the Shining Wizards podcast, and just like a house full of footprints, we are matless tonight. However, that was fucking terrible. However, if you like bro stuff, gay stuff, buck stuff, this is going to be the show for you. We got Tony and HK and myself in the house. To 7:30 Eastern, we will be joined by Brian Solomon, the author of Irresistible Force, the Gorilla Monsoon story. We got plenty of returns to talk about tonight that I'm sure made people's tent pole in their pants. So let's just get into it with some wrestling talk.
And to talk about wrestling,
Tony!
Handsome Kevin.
Sorry, we didn't go over that in pre-show.
You stomped all over his dick there, Tony. What happened?
Well, I'm busy stomping some cattle over here in the old Wild West. This is my background for the night. I feel like I spent $30 on a green screen. Might as well get my money's worth.
You got an Arthur Morgan impression there, Tony?
Oh, who is that? I don't know who that is.
It's Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, I don't play that game.
Okay. All right.
I try to like Grand Theft Auto, like, or GTA as the kids call it these days.
I don't know.
My son is so obsessed with Red Dead and he's turning into a little psycho. Hey, Dad, look at me. I just kidnapped this guy. Watch him throw me to the gators so they can eat him. You know, I just kidnapped guy. I'm going to turn him in now. Throw him off this bridge.
Didn't people lose their minds because you can beat up a woman that was fighting for the woman's right to vote? And just drag her down the street. I thought that was a thing in RDR, the original.
You can it do a lot of things in that game. Yeah, just a lot of things in that game. So I've played the game. I've beat it both ways. As a good guy and as a bad guy. You can kind of pick which
I
way
beat it want. Both ways too. Am I left or am I right?
Okay, well, write that one down.
What I call the good guy and the bad guy. So the first time I played through, just doing all the right things, right? Everything's good. My Molly, she loves, like, she'll walk by and be like, oh, she'll watch me play a little while. It's an interesting game. The second time I'm playing through, I played it as a bad guy.
Ooh. Did he? Hey, yo.
And as I'm riding my horse, I just turn and I shoot a guy right in the face. And my wife was just, why would you do what happened? You were a good guy. What did you do? And I just looked at her and said, I'm a bad guy now.
Julio, oh, Julio. Should have never let them vote in the first place. Back here if you need me.
Well, you know, they stood up for their rights and they lost their seat. That's what happens.
Tropic Al chiming in. The thing no one sees is Tony wearing assless chaps. Shh, it's my secret, bro. Don't give away my secret identity.
Assless chaps man.
Yes.
I'm a chaps man.
Somewhere there's a video of Tony dressed like Vito in The Sopranos doing this.
Yeah, hey guys, it's a joke. Hey.
Don't say nothing, Sal.
Hey guys, it's a goof. Bro, when he was snuggling with that dude and he's telling him, I love you, Johnny Cakes, I was like, oh boy, Vito's a fucking dead man.
Or either that or when he comes up with the security guy in the van.
Holy yes. Shit. Although, wasn't it apropos, though, that fucking, what the fuck's his name? I can't think of his name. Oh, fucking Philly Atardo comes out of the closet to fucking kill him?
There's so many things on that I've watched over the years.
And it's like any great show. You can go back and watch it and catch so many things that you never saw the first time around just because you're so zoned in on the story. You don't just catch like the little things. Like they don't really mean much, but they mean so much more when you see them. You're like, oh, fuck, really?
There's so many lines that people miss too. Like, oh, let me tell you a couple of three things. And you just see everybody looking at them like, what the fuck is he talking about? There's no scraps in my scrapbook.
I think one of my favorite lines was Paulie was telling Christopher about the Chechenian guy. And he goes, he's a Czechoslovakian guy. He's a fucking interior decorator. Christopher looks at him and goes, his apartment looked like shit.
Oh, that was so good. There's such a reason that was considered the best one. Fucking Pine Barrens.
It was a great show. It really was. Yeah. As much as these days I don't like the Italians being thrown under the bus so much, it was a great show.
It certainly was. Absolutely.
I see you looking, HK. It's all right. You can ask questions if you want to.
Well, I didn't realize that Italians got thrown under buses.
I don't know. Like, we get thrown off of bridges with concrete shoes? Like, what the fuck are you getting at?
Okay, gotcha. I don't know, Tony. I don't know.
Do I have to put an Italian flag behind me?
That's not who I am, right? That's not who I am. Brundlefly might know all about it. I wouldn't know.
Maybe a... Do you have a picture of a bowl of spaghetti or something?
All right, come on now. Fucking hand jobs.
Oh, I didn't think... Tony, what happened, buddy?
No, I'm thinking about what I want to do later.
Oh, gotcha, hand jobs.
Just reach over like right next to you.
It's a 2.5-hour flight.
Jeez. Brian R. Solomon is joining us. He's coming back to the show. Talk about Irresistible Force. Is Bruno's? Jesus. Now I got Italian on the mind.
You wrote a Gorilla book Monsoon. About my balls? Oh, Gorilla Monsoon. Gotcha.
I mean, Gorilla Monsoon was built from Manchuria, but, you know,
he was Italian, right?
He's an Italian guy from this area. Yeah. Come on. Vince Sr. didn't have to go too far to look for some good Italian talent. I don't have to go too far to look for some good Italian food. Ah, fuck me, that bombed.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah.
Oof.
I got you there.
So how was your weekend, boys? I like this one.
Woof.
Woof. Woof.
Good weekend. Went out to dinner with the wife on Friday.
Your best gal?
Yeah, my number one gal. We went out to dinner. Saturday, we went out to lunch.
Did you go to the same place?
Of course he did.
Dinner and lunch?
I didn't. Oh, it didn't feel right. But yeah, we went to a different spot on Friday just to, she needed a break. So we went to lunch at my number one spot on Saturday. And then Sunday was just, Sunday was a pretty lazy day, man. Just football all day. I did find the time Sunday morning to crack out about, around 9 miles before the festivities begun. So that was good. So all in all, it's pretty good. Sheesh. Come on, Brundlefly.
That's pretty, I say sheesh as that's fucking amazing every time I hear 9 miles.
9 miles is pretty amazing. Good. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
Tony, I got to ask, do you know the national anthem there, the Italian national anthem?
Yeah, a little bit. It's been a long time. I don't really remember all the words, but I could hum a few bars.
You would think, like, for how much you wave the flag and talk about the proud heritage, you at least know.
I don't hear the national anthem. It's not ingrained like our great national anthem is, you know?
Okay. Do you know, like, the national anthem of the UK?
It's God Save the Queen, isn't it?
Well, see, now you should know yours then, right, Tony? Come on, man. Come on, Tony.
I just remember like the first line.
The first line's woke up this morning, right?
Yeah.
Jesus fuck, Tony. No,
now, what about the Canadian national anthem, Tony?
Jingle bells, Batman smells.
Yeah, see,
I would think.
Is that what Robert Goulet saying? I might have to call some bullshit here, Tony. You got to at least know your national anthem if you're going to fly the flag.
The official name is Il Canto degli Italiani.
Okay.
Which is the song of Italy, but it's more typically known as Fratelli d'Italia because that's the first line. That's how most people know it. So there you go.
Well, I could have read it too. It doesn't mean me Italian.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be in that great Italian accent.
You got a point there.
Yeah.
I mean, HK, does the Shire have a fucking national anthem?
No, no, no. We don't. We're just proud of who we are. We don't need sing song to show our proudness.
Our feet don't hit the floor, and we can easily get through the door. Welcome to the Shire.
No, I was thinking it's the fucking yodeling music from fucking Price is Right.
Price is Right. Brundlefly, how was your weekend, man?
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, mostly relaxing, did a little walking, did a little recording with my man HK up there.
Oh, it's me. All right.
Yeah. You know, and then Sunday, nice, quiet day. So, can't complain. Watch a bunch of
people,
wrestling.
Randy Newman, Tropic Al. I was thinking hi ho myself. Does JJ Rogue come out to the
fucking... Yeah, there he goes. Start the dirt bike.
I'm sorry, I'm not used to drinking during the day.
So. I would have gone with REM, Tiny Happy People.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I killed that.
Yeah, Buck Zumhoff wrote that one.
Buck.
Woof.
You think word's gotten to him what a celebrity he's become on this show?
Well, there's like a handful of people I hope that they know. One is the water server at
Adam's Tavern.
At Adam's Tavern. Rory. I hope message has gotten to Rory to this point.
Rory's the best.
Rory's great. Maybe that bird from the barbecue. I don't know if she knows or not.
Wait, is that the woman that I think you're talking about?
I have no idea.
She's the one with the little kid?
No, I don't think so.
Is that not her kid?
I have no idea. No, we were Tropic Al had mentioned it on Tots.
I was listening today, that's why.
Yeah. So I don't know. Another celebrity for the show. Yeah. Jersey Cow Jesse, right? He's up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't realize members of Al's family were bonding with Jersey Cow Jesse. That was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Little man. Little big man, too. His kid is giant.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
Daddy's a big boy.
Daddy's a big boy. I don't know what else to say. Daddy's a big boy.
I'm writing that down.
So we got 15 minutes. You want to kill something in 15 minutes, Tony? What's on your mind?
I think we should start off with the fucking most depressing news that anybody's heard on this show in the past 14 years. This past weekend, Jaka, friend of the show, Johnny Mangue, the Smooth Savage, part of Team Pazuzu, longtime friend of the show. Matter of fact, Dave Powers was the guy that introduced him to us. Yeah, like episode 14. So that's a long fucking time ago, folks. Suffered a massive heart attack a couple of days ago. And unfortunately, we found out that he passed away, 39 years old. A shame, man.
Way too young.
One of the nicest guys, like always had fun in the business, like always willing to joke around, have a laugh. I actually pulled his first appearance from the show, from the archives. My plan was to kind of do like a not a best of, but like maybe a remembrance of running that episode. Found out about 10 minutes in that that's a terrible idea because the show was a lot different back then. But
the show was a lot different back then.
we've had other appearances with him. He appeared with Angel Ortiz on an episode, which I could find in the archives and whatnot. But yeah, longtime friend of the show, amazing guy. Nothing but love from the wrestling community coming out, supporting him. There's a GoFundMe that I put up in the Discord. It was originally for donations to help him with his medical bills, but now I can imagine that that money's going to go to help his wife. He's only been married a year too, man. That sucks. Oof. Yeah. So I'm sure the money's going to be put to good use, you know, for funeral services, anything else, you know, any
hospital
other expenses.
Bills even still.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So, you know, I know it's not really our gimmick to do a moment of silence, but if anyone deserves one, very dear friend of the show, Jocka, passed away. We want to give him a moment of silence.
Heck yeah.
Rest in peace, buddy.
R.I.P. He's one of those guys I always remember hearing, like, back when I started getting really back into indie wrestling. Like, he was one of those guys, like him, Ortiz and Santana, Janela, that were, like, going everywhere. And you just see his name everywhere and him having great matches. Like, I wish I saw more of him at that time.
Yeah, it was that whole crew. It was Jocka. It was Chris Dickinson, UIFBO, Pinky Sanchez, that entire crew, man. They ran together everywhere. Matt's favorite ring announcer was part of the crew for a while. The fuck
He's
is his name?
Too, right?
He was doing XPW for a while. Larry Legend. Not that Larry Legend.
No. Okay.
No, not that Larry Legend, HK.
Okay. Gotcha. Not the one that was on The Price is Right.
Wait, Larry Zbyszko's on The Price is Right?
No, that Larry Legend was on The Price is Right. I always think of CZW Larry Legend.
Yeah, Black Larry Legend.
Yeah.
Leisure Suit Larry.
See, I would think that your Larry Zbyszko was more of a leisure suit guy. Like, he was always kind of dressed down, cool. Nice.
Yeah,
he was polo shirt. Dressed.
No, he was more Hawaiian shirt, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, yes, he was. Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And when he got into TNA, he didn't give a good goddamn any shirt he picked out for the day.
Well, neither did Tony Schiavone.
I mean, still, as much as I hate Larry Legend or Larry Zbyszko, that
what,
shirt
you don't
that
hate
he wore,
him, Brundle.
Yes, I
don't
do.
Hate him. Don't hate
I absolutely
him.
Hate him.
He'll kick
as much
your ass.
As I dislike him in all fashions of life. I was going to say that shirt he wore on TNA, the
Hogs Riding Hogs. Yeah, I still have that Duke of Dogs Riding Hogs shirt.
That is so good.
Forgot all about Dogs Riding Hogs. I never forget
about the stuff like that.
Got to do some shopping here, guys. You can talk amongst yourselves. That's. Do you actually hate Larry Zbyszko, Brundle Floyd? You don't actually hate him.
I dislike every time he was on my TV.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Hate's probably a strong word because there are people that I hate for, you know, kid touching reasons or stuff like that. Like, at least Larry's not a terrible person. I just dislike him being on my TV.
He's a legend.
In his mind.
Oh, God damn.
You know, I went through championship wrestling months ago, and now I'm going through All-Star Wrestling on the network, and we're turning the corner to 1980, and Larry Zbyszko came out, and he cut his interview where he's got to step out of Bruno's shadow, and he's tired of being referred to as Bruno's protege, and he wants to wrestle Bruno in a scientific match, so we're reliving the greatness all over again.
It's coming.
I am. Zbyszko.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Not that bad.
Yeah, it's kind of terrible.
Yeah, it's not that terrible.
Yeah, you're right. It's not.
It really isn't.
What are you doing? Like, what happened?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. You were like leaning over, like, no.
I was throwing up. I'm fucking wasted.
Jesus.
It must be a K thing. Who knows?
I didn't want to say it, Brundo. Jesus.
So did you guys watch... since we got 10 minutes, did you guys watch SmackDown?
Yes.
No, I was at dinner with my number one gal.
Sorry.
I think my son just brought... Oh, God.
My son just brought me up water. So.
Anyway, honestly, didn't catch much of the beginning of SmackDown with Cena and Sammy. But I'll tell you this much. Aside from the fact that I was waiting for the debut and the return of AJ Lee, which, I mean, everybody knew was coming. Jesus, yeah. Even WWE Shop knew it was coming. They put it out on Twitter a day early, responding to some rando going, "Oh, AJ Lee, oh, she's back, and here's her merchandise."
That's not the first time they did that, too, right?
No, they did it years ago, too, when they brought in Alberto Del Rio, and somebody put out on Twitter, like, "Hey, this guy's supposed to be a big deal. Are we hyping him?" Fucking idiots.
Oh, fuck.
But, yeah, you know what? Aside from that, SmackDown sucked. Ooh. SmackDown was a fucking terrible show, and I'm just
you didn't like Sammy and Cena?
Like I said, I didn't see much of it. I don't mind Brock coming back. I have no problems with that. But everything else in between, it seemed like I swear I started watching it at like maybe like 8:45. By 9:15, they had taken 8 commercial breaks, mm-hmm. and they barely started the next match. I'm like, what the fuck are they doing over there? It was a 3-match show for 2 hours.
See, I thought you, when you sent that, I remember you sending that in a text, like all these commercial breaks. I thought you meant during the Sammy and Cena match, because I turned that on. I maybe saw the last like 15 minutes or so, and there were 2 commercial breaks in between that. At least 2. There were probably another one.
Well, I'm sure they meant to put in
a great match.
Too. I'm sure they meant to put in 6 more, so they fucking backloaded them.
Well, when I turned it on, it was already on a commercial picture-in-picture match. So,
all right, so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that stuff was good. Like I said, like a lot of people don't want Brock Lesnar back. I fucking love it. I think it's going to be a great way for Cena to go off getting murdered by this guy. But that being said, aside from maybe that and the ending, like the whole bunch of middle stuff, like fucking Aleister Black attacking Damian Priest, and then like, oh, we don't know, the bell didn't ring. Fuck off. So tired of that. Julia, I had high hopes for her, man. Not feeling it.
Yep. It feels like Julia and Vekor came in at the same time, and Julia was supposed to be the top one. Vekor just passed her right by.
It's like when they brought in Sasuke and they brought in Taka Michinoku to work with him, and then Taka became the star and Sasuke went back to Japan.
Yep.
It's funny how that works sometimes, man. You know?
Yeah.
Sasuke was supposed to be the guy.
Oh, yeah. They brought him in. He was supposed to run everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Why do you think Taka was jobbing to him when they first brought the two of them in?
I thought it was always supposed to be Taka.
No.
Get the fuck out of town.
Yeah.
It worked for Sasuke. I mean, he joined the Japanese diet. He got caught banging somebody with his mask on. Well, pictures out there.
Are they sure it was him?
Right.
Brundo, were you in
somebody
Japan?
In a Sasuke mask. No, it would look a lot different if it was me.
He was banging cocktail waitresses 2 at a time.
2 at a time?
It's going to be that kind of show. What movie was that? That was My Blue Heaven, wasn't it?
Oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah. Great song. Great movie.
I don't know that one at all. Great.
Well, the song is pretty good, too.
Yeah, the song was great. We played that at my wedding.
Who came out to that song?
Oh, nobody. No, my wedding was all wrestling songs.
Double T?
Fuck you guys. Fucking assholes. I like when we insult Double T, because then when he comes back next week, he's going to be a house of fire, and maybe stutter only once or twice when he goes on a tirade attacking all of us.
It'll be all right. Yeah. I wore this hat for him, just for him.
Oh, the Bluefish? Yeah, they're a great team.
Yeah.
There's videos online. There's a goofy guy and his kids, and like one of his kids has got a fiance, and they do silly shit like that where they'll put up pictures of different, like whether they're football teams or baseball team logos, and she has to guess who they are. And their father sits there with her, and every time a logo comes up and she completely destroys it, he goes, "The fuck's wrong with you?"
I think I've seen that. That's fucking great.
And then they show the logo and they play the NFL Now theme and it's got the fucking name that she said underneath it. It's fucking hysterical.
I used to do shit like that to Judy all the time. I'd be watching the game and she'd ask me who was playing and it could have been hockey. And she'd be like, who's playing? I'm like, oh, it's the Miami Pistons versus the New York Warriors. It's in the seventh inning. She's like, okay, enjoy your game. Like retrospectively, it's like, God, what an asshole move.
That was a, you know, there was a phenomenal shirt I saw recently on somebody. It was a picture of a guy hitting a home run, and it says touchdown. It's like, I fucking
see, that's great.
Yeah.
Like, she'd see a picture of the Cowboys logo, and she'd go, stars? Or like the Colts, like the horseshoes. She'd be like, the horseshoes!
Of course it was. So I got to ask, because I didn't watch SmackDown at all. What are they doing with Aleister? What is his, like, what? Where is he going? What's his?
He's creepy. Ooh,
pretty okay. much. He spent the first 2 months squashing or feuding with Miz and Mello, and now he's feuding with Priest.
Because Priest is kind of spooky, too. Woo.
I don't like that. I don't care.
And the Wyatts are spooky. Woo. Right. And Alexa Bliss is a little spooky. Woo.
Okay, a little spooky.
We are getting close to Halloween.
Oh.
Spooky times.
Spooky Battle Royale.
I mean, if you look at the three big names that came back, made the jump back, him, Rusev, and Andrade. Like, which one of those guys do you think has made an impact since they come back?
Andrade is not. He's not. I don't. No. Andrade wasn't a big main roster player, anyways. He was. He was a great spot when he was in NXT. But main roster, oh, he wasn't the mainstay.
Yeah,
Rusev was great on the main roster. Since he's come back, I think he's done a lot of great things.
Yeah, that's true. The Rusev, it's still kind of early. Yeah. I did really like that match with Sheamus.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to see where he goes next.
Aleister, I think Aleister's got some legs though. Like there's some depth. They can do different things with him. Yeah. But yeah, Rusev's the guy, I guess, out of the three that you listed.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm just kind of tired of all the creepy characters.
What do you want?
I want Alexa Bliss to win all the belts.
But she's kind of creepy too, Tony.
Yeah, but she's cute creepy.
Oh, there's a difference.
Like she'll slit your throat and she'll go like, ooh, woo.
Hump the wound? What the
fuck? Really?
Would you consider Oscar? Let me write that down. Sorry. Would you consider Oscar?
Hump the wound?
Yeah.
As a contender. By the way, Motzbach said it was Fredo from Godfather who's banging cocktail waitresses two at a time. Thank you for that. Everybody in the chat, Motzbach's there. SJ's there. William Mercer yeah. Jr. there.
Said would you consider Hulu. Oscar a creepy character?
No,
all the face makeup and everything.
No, because she's kabuki.
Yeah,
Rhea Ripley.
Nah, Rhea Ripley's like an assassin. She's not really creepy. Hmm. I don't think.
You don't think so?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Maybe.
I don't know. Like the Wyatts are creepy. I think Aleister is kind of there. Damian Priest is like a kind of iffy thing, but Alexa's kind of like still on the fence. I guess they didn't. They're not putting her back with the Wyatts.
No, there might be though. There's time.
Who knows?
There's time. They plant the seeds. They let the seed grow into a plant, right?
No, but I like the stuff she's doing with Charlotte right now. Have they been on TV lately? They've been kind of quiet, right?
A little quiet, yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that. It's kind of cool. Like everybody was like down on Charlotte when she came back, but then you put those two together, it's been amazing.
I'm always gonna be down on Charlotte. It's not going to change.
Dude, we got a guest coming in. Stop
it's
it.
It's not going to change.
No, that wasn't I don't think.
No, that wasn't one of those things, you horn yeah. dog.
Really?
He's yeah. not a fan of Charlotte. I get it.
Yeah, huh? Jesus, yeah. Tony. Let me do this.
It would be way more creative if it was that other one.
All right, let's see. All right, HK. Nope, wrong one, dude.
I gotcha. I'm doing
wrong
the thing.
One. Come on. You're getting there.
Oh, son of a bitch. Hold on. Wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah, don't worry. I'm pressing buttons over here.
Don't worry, it's our first show.
Yeah.
I can't believe I left you guys in charge. Ladies and gentlemen, the irresistible force himself, Brian Solomon, returns to the program.
Hi, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Doing all right, man. That voice always comforts me, and all I ever expected is to hear, shut up and wrestle.
That's my son. If he was here, I would have him say it right now. He's out at karate right now, but he might come back before we finish.
Brian Solomon, creating warriors for the future. I love it. I love right. it.
No mercy.
It's for the weak.
Strike first. Strike hard.
Sweep the leg.
So how you been? I heard you've been pretty busy.
Yeah, you could say that. Kind of busy. I'm in the middle of recording the audiobook for Irresistible Force, The Life and Times of Gorilla Monsoon. Actually, I expect to finish it tomorrow. And I'm getting sick of the sound of my own voice, to be honest. I really am. Because I've been recording this book now for a couple of weeks and doing my own podcast. And now I'm starting to do all these appearances to promote the book, which is fantastic. But I'm just getting disgusted with myself. I just am annoying myself with my own voice. So, you know, I'll get over it. I'll get over it.
Well, I'm glad you would, and it's glad to hear that you're finally wrapping up on the audio portion. I know you've been talking about it, and I know it's got to be a bit of a slog, but, we probably talked about it last time, but just to freshen up, do you prefer doing the audio yourself for your books? You feel like you can do it justice more than anybody else?
Absolutely. In fact, I try to insist on it. I don't want other people doing it. The last one I did for Blood and Fire, it was a different company than this one, and I had a harder time getting to do this audiobook. The book is published by ECW Press, but the audiobook is a different company, and they're out in California, and they kind of have a stable of voice narrators or whatever that they use. And so I had to sell them on having me do it because they were just going to use one of their people, and they started saying, you know, send us a list of every name or word in the entire book that you think our narrator might not know how to pronounce. And I'm going like, okay, why don't you just have me do it? I mean, do you know how long it's going to take for me to do that? And they were like, well, do you have experience? And I said, okay, I do a podcast every week.
Can you read?
Do you even know me?
I'm a teacher. I'm a public speaker. I did the last audiobook for my last book. Yes, I think I could. And they made me send a demo, so I had to do like a sample. And they finally let me do it, and I'm glad. I mean, I really had to jump through some hoops, but I am. Yeah, it's very important to me because you hear so many times horror stories about audiobooks where people, you know, everything is wrong and everything's mispronounced and it distracts people and everything. And, you know, I definitely don't want that.
If you could choose somebody outside, like you're not going to do your audio book, but you could pick somebody handpicked. Who would you pick to read one of your books?
You know, you sound like that audio book company because that was one of the questions they asked me.
Hey, I don't
they were like, that's what they said to me. Ideally, what kind of a voice would you like? And I'm thinking, mine. But they were like, you know, is there an actor or somebody? And the funny thing is, in my head, the person I have in my head is dead, so they can't do it. But ideally, it would be like the narration, the Ray Liotta narration from Goodfellas. That would be the most perfect voice I could imagine for this book. But as far as living people, I forget. I actually had somebody that I thought would be great. Oh, you know who I like to? Keith David, the guy who does a lot of the Ken Burns documentaries. You'd recognize his voice in a second. He actually even did one for WWE. He did the history of the World Heavyweight Championship. If you ever heard that one, that documentary they did, he's the guy. And he's just got a great voice.
Our friend Julio chimes in. Paul Bearer, would you have Paul?
Oh, yes. No, I don't think that would really work. No.
God, that book would be like 10 cassettes.
Will you stop? No, not going to happen.
You wouldn't tap fellow host Brian Last or, you know, God help us, Jim Cornette to read the book.
Somebody actually said I would pay good money to have Jim Cornette be the narrator. And I mean, I would pay money to have him be the narrator of anything. But he's in the book because I interviewed him for the book. But the other thing I kept hearing was, you know, I'm good friends with Joe Morata, who does the Our Vantage Point podcast, and he's obsessed with Gorilla Monsoon, and he does those Gorilla Monsoon AI podcasts that everybody was going crazy for, which are hilarious.
Yep.
And people were saying, you should just have the Gorilla Monsoon AI read the book about his life. And I'm just going, that sounds great on paper. It's very morbid and disturbing. And I can't even imagine what his family would think. So I'm just like, maybe not. Maybe
I've not. Heard AI read books too, and some of the pronunciations just aren't there. So
right.
I can't imagine Monsoon reading his own book and just pronouncing everything wrong.
I mean, I wouldn't be against him doing like a little section as a promo or a gag. Actually, Joe did one like that for me where it's Gorilla and he's on the set of, one of the shows, and he's talking about my book and telling people to buy it. It's very, very weird, but I liked it.
See, I would put Gorilla in the middle of like one of the chapters, and then he just takes over and he gets really aggravated with whatever he's reading. And he goes, who wrote this shit? I'm done. And like, you just hear footsteps and the door slam.
Great. I'll have you thrown out of here. Yeah.
This book is a miscarriage of justice.
Uh-huh. This book went to the well once too often.
This book was not excellently executed.
Speaking of, actually, I should say, I keep forgetting to mention this all the time, and it's actually one of the biggest selling points of the book. The foreword is by Bret Hart.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's thrilled. Great. I'm grateful to his brother, Ross, who made the introduction to Bret. I mean, I had spoken to him briefly back when I worked at WWE, but that was a very long time ago. So to get him on board, you know, I didn't realize until it was Ross who was telling me the connection with the Hart family and Gorilla Monsoon and how close they were. And that's when I started thinking, well, it should be Bret. That would be great to get him to do it.
Yeah. I remember you had a bunch of audio from your time when you worked at WWF, from when you were doing interviews for WWF magazine. I think famously there was one with Roddy Piper that I remember you playing, mm-hmm. right? Did you, and I don't remember, so I'll find out anyway. Did you ever have a chance to sit with Gorilla Monsoon back in the day while you were working there?
No. In fact, in the introduction to the book, I talk about that. I started there in February 2000.
Oh, okay.
And
gotcha.
My first interview was in October 1999. They kind of strung me along for a few months, but October 99. And what I didn't realize it at the time, but it was like 10 days after Gorilla Monsoon's funeral. And he had been coming into the TV studio right up until September. So I really just missed him. But there were so many people that I worked with that, you know, knew him and worked with him. And I would hear so many stories. And so, I mean, I got really close. I mean, I met Freddie Blassie. I met Arnold Skolin. I got to, you know, meet people like that. But Gorilla, I missed.
It's so awesome how many connections you got to make with all these legends. What goes into the thought process once you're finished with the Sheik book, or maybe while you're doing the Sheik book, that you decided that Gorilla Monsoon was going to be your next topic to tackle?
Well, I did a little detour in between. I published a book in 2023 called Superheroes, the History of a Pop Culture Phenomenon from Ant-Man to Zorro. And that was kind of a book. I pitched that and the Sheik book at the same time to two different publishing companies. Kids never do that because... They both said yes, but like about 6 months apart. So I'm starting the Sheik book thinking, oh, I guess nothing's coming around with that Superheroes book. And then a few months later, they come to me. We want to do the Superheroes book. So I did them right on top of each other, but I didn't plan it that way. But I was thinking about what my next wrestling book was going to be. And are you guys familiar? I have to give this man credit. Are you guys familiar with Dr. Mike Leno?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
The legend.
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
Sure
in the world
is.
Of wrestling and photography and fandom. He's an interesting, unusual guy. But I will not, I have to say it because I even mentioned it in the acknowledgments. He had me on his podcast talking about Blood and Fire. And we were spitballing on that show about, hey, what's your next book going to be? And I had some thoughts and ideas. And he's the one who said, what about Gorilla Monsoon? And a light bulb went off in my head, because here's the thing. I like to have, I'm one of these crazy people as a writer. I actually like to have a lot of people read my work. It's very important to me. I'm not one of these, you know, sometimes you get people who say, Like, I don't care, you know, who reads it or whatever. As long as, you know, the work's what's important to me. It's very important to me to reach a big readership. I think I got spoiled by working at WWE. And so what I like about Gorilla Monsoon and why that appealed to me is he's a major figure from, you know, the Hulkamania era that everybody knows who watched wrestling then. And even if you're too young, you still have a kind of an idea of who he was. His voice is all over all these documentaries and things. Yep. But at the same time, his career goes back so far that I could talk about the 60s, the 70s. I could talk about the territories, Bruno Sammartino. There were all these things that I could talk about that I'm most interested in without having to worry, oh my God, nobody's going to want to read this book about wrestling in the 60s and about people they don't know, because the name value of Gorilla Monsoon will carry the book. So that's what I loved about the idea, that I could write about old school wrestling, but it was in a package that I know that fans of all ages would be interested in picking up.
What's your favorite role that Gorilla played in the wrestling business? Was it wrestler in the 60s? Was it in the 70s where he started speaking and started changing? Was it in the 80s when he's sitting on commentary with Jesse Ventura? Was it his run as president of the WWF?
Well, I mean, my favorite as a fan would be him as an announcer, just because, I mean, you know, I grew up in that era. I started watching the WWF around the time of WrestleMania 3, and, you know, Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura doing the pay-per-views and all that, that was my thing. But what I'm most interested in, especially now, and what I wanted to write about the most, was the fact that he was the part owner of the company at one time, and the behind-the-scenes stuff that went into that, because fans never really knew. And by the time Vince took over, you know, that was done. He was bought out and everything. But, I mean, he spent 13 years as a, 20 to 25% owner of that company. And I also found out that he was originally intended to be the successor. He was supposed to take over. So there was a lot of politics and things, more than people realized, that were going on behind the scenes. So that's what really hooked me in.
That is unbelievably fascinating. I had no idea. I had no idea about that. Was there anything that you learned about Gorilla along the way that didn't make it into the book, that you know, if you were to go back, oh boy, I could maybe gotten this story in there, but didn't quite make it.
I tried so much to squeeze every little thing I could into this book. In fact, I would make a conscious effort. I talked to a friend of mine named Tom Carlucci, and he used to work there. And he was Gorilla Monsoon's driver for a while. And he would give me these crazy random bits of trivia. Like, I remember one time he told me, you know what Gorilla liked to listen to in the car when we'd be driving in the rental car? He goes, Richard Pryor. He had all these tapes of Richard Pryor. And he thought he was the fun. And I'm thinking, man, I got to get this in there somewhere. But how? Where? You know, I got it. This is so weird and interesting. And I found a place. I just squeezed it in somewhere. And I don't know. I mean, I really put everything. You know, there was one thing that comes to mind that I just said, God, I don't know where the heck to put this. Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan were on Nickelodeon. I don't know if you guys ever saw that. I think it was... It might have been Double Dare or one of those shows on Nickelodeon.
Really,
where they had them like Gorilla. It was a game show, and Bobby had one kid that it was, you know, like what was like those old shows like $64,000 Pyramid, where it's a contestant and a celebrity, right?
Okay.
So you had one kid with Bobby Heenan and one kid with Gorilla, and they're playing against each other, and it winds up with Gorilla and Bobby getting slimed, you know, because it's Nickelodeon. Bobby Heenan is rolling around on the floor in the slime. I mean, it's so crazy, but it just didn't fit anywhere and it didn't make the cut. So that's one thing.
I suppose doing all this research on Gorilla, you had to learn a lot about people connected to him. Is there anything that shocked you from, you know, the people connected to Gorilla? Is there any stories that popped to you from, you know, like I say, just in your research about Gorilla, you had to learn more about Gorilla's connections. Was there anything that popped there?
Yeah, there was actually a very enlightening person for this process was the ring announcer, Gary Michael Capetta. A lot of people don't may not know this because, you know, in later years, Gary Capetta, he worked for WCW and he did a lot of other things. A lot of people may know he started in the WWF. He was, but he was really Gorilla's guy. I didn't really know how connected they were. Gorilla brought him into the business in the 70s, right out of school, had him on all of his shows. And Gary, as a kid, as a young guy, got to know him really well. And he gave me so much insight. Like, it was from talking to him that I started to learn about how pissed off Gorilla was when Vince McMahon came in and bought the company. That it wasn't this smooth, happy little thing. That he was angry and they had to make him happy. That's how he got such a great deal. And so Gary was telling me how when it first went down, he was just miserable to be around, and which is not typically the case for him. Everybody loved him. He was easy to get along with. And Gary was telling me, like, he was so disillusioned because he thought he would have this nest egg forever, this piece that he owned. He was going to pass it on to his kids and all this stuff. I think if you think about it today, that would be worth a couple of $1 billion if he still had 20% ownership of that company. Think about it. No. So, you know, Gary was saying, like, you'd approach him at TV and be, you know, talking to him, what's my finish? What am I supposed to do? Where do I go? And Gorilla would just say, you know, how do I know? I just fucking work here like you do. Like he was just, he was just like inconsolable, and they had to like kind of sweeten the deal and make him happy. So I didn't know about a lot of that. And that got me asking other people and asking around. And in wrestling, it's funny. People sit on these secrets and things. But when you ask the right question, they give you the answer, but they're waiting to see if you're going to ask the right question. So when I started asking around, people started confirming it. They were like, yep, that is what happened. So that was a thing I wanted to really explore in the book.
It's crazy to hear stuff like that because, like you said, like, I mean, I never met the man. I didn't know the man. But when you saw him on TV, especially as a kid, he was always like the nice guy. He always felt like grandpa, you know, and like Heenan would always give him shit like on TV and he'd always yell at Heenan, or Jesse would try to like, you know, play up what the bad guys are doing, you know, like I didn't see this, I didn't see that, or call out the good guys. And Gorilla would say like, hey, it's an eye for an eye. And he'd be like, yeah, of course it's an eye for an eye. Gorilla rules, you know? So it's kind of weird hearing that, you know, this lovable guy that we all enjoyed growing up, like just had to go through it with this stuff.
Yeah.
You also interviewed, you went and talked to, I believe is his wife and his daughter for the book. What's it like when you approach them? Like, hey, I want to write a book about your husband or about your dad. I want to write a book about Gorilla. How's that process?
They were great. And they made the difference in this book. Cause with the Sheik book, I did not have family involvement. That was very difficult. They wanted no part of it. And I'm sorry about that, that it's a shame. I wish they'd been on board, but they weren't. But this book was completely different. And, you know, I just tried to reach out to them. I found Valerie, his daughter. She was kind of the contact person because I knew that Maureen was old and not in the greatest health, his wife. And I found Valerie and I reached out to her, and it was like, I had to kind of prove myself, you know what I mean? That I was serious and that I, you know, was not looking to, you know, sometimes the families are nervous. Like, what do you want to write about? And I know when she brought it to Maureen was nervous at first. She's very old fashioned. And there were things like she was nervous about people knowing about Joey Morella and his issues with drugs, or, you know, Gorilla and Maureen were both married before they married each other. And Maureen, you know, thought, oh, what are people going to think? And, you know, I think their daughter Valerie was born before they got married. And, you know, she's an old fashioned lady. So she's nervous about these things getting out there. And first of all, Valerie was like, look, Mom, everybody knows a lot of these things already. Like they, you know, this isn't like some huge deal. And I think when they met me, that's when they started really understanding. Like I went over there two different times to her apartment before she passed away, and we talked and they showed me photos and I interviewed them and things, and they started to see, I think, that I was serious and I was legit and I wanted to really do the best job I could. And then they opened up and the book would be nowhere near what it is without them.
fast.
I know, and the guys hate when I say this. I dabbled in commentary for a little while, and I know that I like even when it was like just a show every couple of months. I always did my homework. I made sure I knew who the wrestlers were. I knew what their backstories were. Like maybe just some things about them that I could pepper in while I was calling a match. Was Gorilla the kind of guy, did you find out? Did he do the work or was he just like, hey, I know everything that's going on. This is all going to be off the cuff. And it was always magic.
I think what you have to remember about him is he was always very plugged in. So yeah. Like he didn't have to necessarily do as much work because he was just surrounded by it. Like he was tight with Vince and, you know, he, of course he would always make sure he was familiar with the storylines and all the wrestlers and the things they were trying to get over. But it was almost like this intuitive thing just from being such an integral part of the company that he kind of knew the things to say and what they were trying to get over. He was very professional about it. And he was very good at ad-libbing. A lot of the people that told me that worked on primetime and things like that would say it was just them talking. Like they had a run sheet. They knew the things they had to talk about and the matches and what was, and then they just did it. Like they just had a natural improvisational skill that I think a lot of the announcers today just don't have.
Sure. I know you talked about him being angry with the whole Vince and the ownership, you know, the company fiasco. Was there anything that you found out that really ticked him off outside of that? Like, was there something that you learned in your research that really set him off? Maybe it was an angle that he was involved in or something that was done on TV or at a show somewhere or anything backstage?
Yeah, there's a few things like that. There was a story about Dynamite Kid hazing Joey Morella. He drugged him and shaved his eyebrows and his hair off.
Oh.
And I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's out of his mind when you know whose father... You know who his father is. Why would you do that? You know,
yeah.
And so he was absolutely furious about that. I know that, and because they had to keep Joey off TV till his hair grew back, he couldn't even work. So there was that, and another thing, a big one actually. So I don't know if you know, but at one point, Gorilla Monsoon was part owner in Puerto Rico as well.
Yeah,
in Carlos Colon's promotion, and he around the time, not long after he sold his ownership stakes. He still had a good relationship with them. And the WWF, when they were expanding in 1985, one place they were staying away from was Puerto Rico because of Gorilla's connection there. You know, they didn't want to do that. But there was a guy that worked there, Jim Troy, who was like an assistant to Vince McMahon, who didn't really know all the ins and outs. And he went ahead and he booked a show in Puerto Rico without telling anybody. And he thought he was doing a great thing that they were going to love. And Vince went along with it because he thought that Gorilla was on board. Gorilla had no idea that this was happening. And it turned into a big, crazy mess. They went down there and Gorilla tried to smooth it over with Colon. It didn't work. Colon decided to run opposition on the same night and absolutely flattened them and totally outdrew them. And it was very embarrassing. And on top of it, Gorilla wound up being the one who did the commentary and the ring announcing for the WWF show. In Puerto Rico, and it was pouring rain.
You know? All right, that's what I was going to ask you about.
It was just a mess.
Yeah, and if you haven't, I mean, bits and pieces of it. I know that Savage wrestled Tito, and Tito was the IC champ. I think at the time, maybe
I
still.
Think so.
And I think it was topped by Hogan and Big John Studd, if I remember right.
Actually, the last match that went on was Pedro Morales
because
it was Puerto Rico. They put him on last, and he literally just. He called for the finish after about a minute and a half because they just wanted to get the hell out of there. They had about 1,000 people there in a 30,000 seat stadium. And, you know, they were going to use the video. They were going to do like a Coliseum video release, like the big event, like the Toronto big event, like a special release. And it wound up being unusable. I think, you know, little bits and pieces have surfaced in places. But it was just unusable. Yeah. So that was a big debacle for sure.
Yeah. If you guys, I don't know if HK or Brundo have seen it or anybody out there. I think if you go on YouTube and you search Puerto Rican downpour, like I know that's kind of like the moniker that it's received over the years. It's pretty dangerous too. I think it was, Hogan gave Big John Studd an atomic drop and they both went down because their feet went out from under them. Like,
yeah, because of the mat being slippery.
Yeah, it's hysterical. Jeez. Like, the sky's open and you just see all the umbrellas go up in the crowd. What, 50 people that were on the hard side of the camera?
So they had a big kind of, what do you call it, like a transparent plastic tarp, basically, over all of the equipment and over the announce table. So the announcers were like encased in plastic. And the producer, Nelson Swegler, who was like Kevin Dunn's predecessor, he was telling me that Gorilla is under the plastic tarp and he's chain smoking because he's so friggin' nervous and pissed off. And the whole thing is filling with smoke where they can't see the monitors. And he's just going, Gino, could you just please stop smoking? And he won't stop because he doesn't want to be there. It's a total disaster. Like a really small crowd. It was just embarrassing. Oh, and actually one last detail about that was, so they had Wendy Richter there, and Wendy Richter had Cyndi Lauper with her. So Cyndi Lauper was like at the time the biggest pop star in America. I mean, yep. Maybe second to Michael Jackson. And she is in the middle of this going, what the hell is happening? Like, there's a promotional war going on. Cologne's people are threatening Hulk Hogan. Wendy Richter's husband was Hugo Savinovich, who was the announcer for Carlos Cologne. I mean, it almost ended the relationship of Cyndi Lauper with the WWF.
Wow. I forgot they were married. Wow.
Yes.
Jeez.
It's insane. I got to ask, because these are the things that kind of intrigue me every now and again, especially somebody that does such a deep dive on a guy like Gorilla Monsoon. Did you find like just basic shit, like shit that you would ask them, like on a first date, like what was Gorilla's favorite drink? What was his favorite food? Who was his favorite wrestler? What did you find this type of shit out about Gorilla?
I did exactly that. And I found out from his daughter. And actually, it's funny you asked me that because there are some things that didn't make it in the book. Like I found out that one of his favorite movies was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So
it's awesome.
And he also loved the movie Grease. And his daughter said to me that he waited and waited, like his favorite part was when Olivia Newton-John comes out at the end and she's all like slutty and with the leather jacket. Or, like that was like you couldn't even talk to him when that part of the movie happened. So she said that she told me what brand of cigarettes he smoked, Cool Menthols. I wanted to know that. His favorite thing apparently, like his favorite guilty pleasure, like to sit down and eat, was he liked to have peanut butter sandwiches with a glass of orange soda. Okay. Now, if you looked at him, you could kind of understand why he ate whatever he felt like eating. But she said this was his favorite thing. A peanut butter sandwich and a glass of orange soda would make him, you know, the happiest guy in the world. So I found out stuff like that, like his taste in music was interesting because, you know, he was Italian. He was Italian-American. And he came from, you know, he was born in the 30s. So he was kind of from that generation, grew up during World War II and everything. And so, you know, loved Sinatra, loved Tony Bennett, loved Nat King Cole and all that kind of music. And, you know, he would, and Italian opera too. He was a big fan of opera. And he used to be able to sing, which I don't think a lot of people know. Yeah, so stuff like that.
So we got Gorilla Monsoon. We got Jimmy Hart. We got Mean Gene. Like there were quite a few crooners in the WWF in the 80s.
Mean Gene was in a vocal group. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy Hart was too, actually, the Gentries.
I have the 45 of Jimmy Hart, the Gentries.
Keep on dancing. And Mean Gene, I forget the name of the group. I don't think they really had any success or anything, but he did sing. Gorilla, they said, I talked to a lot of people. Unfortunately, there's no recording, but he had kind of this baritone voice, and he grew up listening to opera and to Italian folk songs, and he would sing. Like he sang at all their weddings, at his daughter's weddings, and he sang at Giant Baba's wedding, which would be an incredible thing to witness. Can you imagine
Good
that?
God.
And he used to sing, you know, in the car, in the shower. He loved to sing, and he had a very kind of sweet baritone operatic voice, so they said.
Did he ever see himself winning a championship? Like, did you ever come across anybody that maybe gave a hint that he had a wish that he would win like a title at some point, maybe even the big one?
I don't think it mattered. You know, he was from that generation, or at least I can't speak for every single wrestler, but for someone like him, you know, he was a smart guy who understood the business. And the most important thing to him was making money in the business. And he made more money than almost anybody from his era. So what in the world would he have to complain about? You know what I mean? Like he was one of the biggest attractions. He was plugged in, had points on the company. He's not going to sit there and go like, I wish I was the world champion. It's just, it wouldn't be something that, I'm not saying there weren't wrestlers that thought that way. I mean, certainly like with the NWA title, there was a certain amount of prestige in the business and you wanted to be the guy who had it. But, you know, Gorilla understood his place. Like, you know, Bruno was the man and Bruno was steering the ship and Bruno was the attraction. And so if you were hooked up with him, that's where you wanted to be. And he knew that what his place was to be the heel, to be the challenger. Bruno had to have convincing, fresh opponents. And he wound up, I mean, to his credit, becoming one of the most memorable opponents. And he had more title shots against Bruno than any other wrestler. So, I mean, I think he was happy with that. He understood this position I'm in. It doesn't matter if I win the title or not. I mean, I'm in a prime position. I think he was fine with that.
Yeah.
Later on, he basically became the guy to get to Bruno too for a while, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of those guys like Chief J Strongbow, those kind of where in his case he'd be a special attraction like Andre the Giant, you know. And he would either kind of be losing to the heels who were on their way up to Bruno, and he'd lose in a way where he'd save face, you know, maybe a count out or a DQ, or the heel would cheat flagrantly and pin him, that kind of thing. Or the other thing he would do is beat the guys that were on the way down, like the people that Bruno had beaten. Then maybe they might go against Gorilla and he'd give them one last, you know, defeat on their way out of the territory, basically. So he had his place. But you got to remember, at the time that was happening, when he was the babyface in the 70s, he was already in the office. He already had a piece of the company. So he honestly didn't want to be that heavily involved in angles and storylines and big programs. Like, he was trying to scale it back so he could do all the behind the scenes stuff.
I know we're kind of spoiling a lot of the book, and that's always
it's a huge book. I'm not worried about that.
I understand, but there's always that kind of balance where, like, you don't want to give away the house, but I do want to ask you, like, I know maybe championships weren't his thing. He understood the business. How does the whole Muhammad Ali situation come about?
His place in it, you mean?
Yeah. Anything behind the scenes? Like, was he the one that wanted to do it? How did that, you know, how was that approached?
He was against the entire thing.
Really?
That was a big Vince McMahon, Vince Jr. idea. And he had brought that to his father. So basically, like, Antonio Inoki put all this money in front of Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali said, I'll do it. They were looking for somebody to partner with in America. Muhammad Ali's manager or somebody that was involved in his promotions was Bob Arum, the promoter Bob Arum. And Bob Arum was friends with Vince McMahon Jr. They had done some promotional work together. So Bob brought it to Vince. Vince said, I'm going to bring this to my father. Maybe we could actually like turn this into a big thing internationally. And so Gino Gorilla was not in favor of this. He never liked the idea of mixing things up with boxers or doing things where unpredictable things could happen. He did not like that kind of thing. So, but once they were committed, he wanted to help it try to be as much of a success as it could be. So they had a thought, because in those days, the thinking for most sports fans, if you were a boxing fan or if you liked boxing and wrestling or whatever, the thought was that, you know, the boxer was going to kill the wrestler. He'd have no chance. And it was like, you know, once he gets punched in the face, forget it, especially because they're thinking, a lot of fans thinking, well, wrestling's fake, boxing's not fake. So the wrestler, you know, doesn't stand a chance. So they wanted to do something to make fans think that Muhammad Ali might actually lose. They wanted to put that doubt in fans' minds. So that's where the idea came. Okay, we'll put him, we'll have this impromptu match with Gorilla Monsoon, and Gorilla will just manhandle him and make him look like a child, which he did. And that was the point of it, to put that doubt in people's minds. And in fact, it was so convincing. I mean, Gorilla just really like embarrasses him. And then he cuts a promo after the match where he says he did, I could have broken his arm, I could have broken his leg. He didn't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch and all that kind of stuff. It was such a, almost like a burial that they had to do, because they were doing promotional work all over the country in different territories. They wound up doing this thing where Muhammad Ali went to the AWA territory, and I think Vince went with him, and they had a full-on boxer versus wrestler exhibition match. And I forget who it was against, but it was an AWA wrestler, and they had Muhammad Ali be a lot more competitive, and they actually showed clips of it on ABC's Wide World of Sports, and Howard Cosell is just shitting all over it and everything. But they did that to try to, they were almost trying to say, okay, Muhammad Ali isn't that pathetic. They were trying to actually make him look halfway decent, because Gorilla had really made him look like he was nothing.
Yeah, he sure did. I'll never forget that interview too. Everything you said, just, yeah. Poor Muhammad.
Great boxer, terrible, terrible as a wrestler. And then,
well, I'm sure you've heard it's made the rounds where the show, this is off on an aside, where Inoki, when he wrestled Muhammad Ali in Japan, there's audio of Bruno talking with Bill Apter, kind of calling the match into a recorder, and Bruno is just like laying waste to everything. What an embarrassment the whole match was.
Well, that's what I think a lot of people don't understand, is it's kind of looked back on sort of fondly, and people say, oh, it's the birth of MMA and all this thing. No, I mean, that's really what people say.
Yeah.
But that whole thing was considered a complete disaster at the time in the boxing world and the wrestling world. My grandfather was a boxer and a fight coach, and he was kind of in his prime in the 70s coaching. So he remembered the whole thing really well. And anytime you brought it up, he was just like, oh, that was just a mess. It was embarrassing. That was just so stupid. I don't know why Ali did that. Just really stupid and dumb. So it didn't have the greatest reputation, the whole thing. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible match. It's just horrible.
Yeah, the only WWF was the only one that made money, and that's off of San Martino and Hansen.
Yeah, right.
If it wasn't for that, it would have probably flopped there too.
And supposedly Vince Sr. had gone to Bruno and begged him, because he was just getting over the broken neck from Hansen, and said,
this, in the hospital.
Yeah, like, this show is going to be a dog. Like, I can't, you know, put people in a shoebox for this. We need to attract a crowd, and that's where the Hansen San Martino rematch came about. And in fact, I had even read somewhere that there was talk that Vince Sr. wanted to take Inoki out of it and just have it be Ali versus Bruno, because he thought that would be a much bigger attraction in the United States, because nobody knew who the heck Antonio Inoki was in America. But obviously that wasn't going to happen, because Inoki was the one that put the money up. So,
yeah,
I mean, there's no way he's going to step aside. That was the entire point of why he wanted to do it, you know. So, but they were always concerned about that working.
And it doesn't really help that Bruno was always a giant baba guy either, you know?
That's true. And and so was Monsoon. The two of them would not work for Inoki, even when the deal started up with Inoki in like 75 or so, and they cut ties with Baba and went to work for Inoki. Those guys would not go over there. They were still loyal to Baba. In fact, I think Bruno still used to go on tours for Baba, even when they weren't officially doing business with him anymore.
Yeah, yeah. He sure did. And Vince actually respected that.
His last Japanese match was a tour for Baba. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. When he had his last match against George the Animal Steel in 81, I think he actually went to Japan after that, right? And had a couple of matches there for Baba. I think it was like right after that.
I want to ask, just because on the flip side, I got the first day questions, right? I got the orange soda and the peanut butter sandwiches, right? I got, he's smoking Cools, right? I know what he likes, Grease, right? All black, right? When she's all slewed up, I'm right with it. Was there anything he just fucking wouldn't stand for? Like, was there something that, like, I mean, beyond a pet peeve, just something that he goes, nope, not happening. Did he have anything like that? Or did you learn anything like that about him?
You mean in wrestling? like something
in life, man, in life.
Well, all right. Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, this isn't like some big, crazy, shocking thing, but he was very, very, very anti-drugs. And, you know, it was at a time when the company was filled with drugs, you know, so yep. It had to be really, yeah. really hard for him. Look, he was of his time. He was from a generation where there was zero drug tolerance. I mean, for anything. Like, they would drink up a storm. They would drink till they were on the floor. But which, by the way, Gino never did. He was not a heavy drinker. But drugs was an absolute line in the sand. And so what I mean by that is he was so extreme. Maureen told me a story that they went to the movies once. And there was a guy sitting in the back of the theater smoking a joint. And you know, nowadays that's like almost any movie theater you go into, but Gino got so, he was so pissed off that he almost got into a fight with the guy, and he was ready to leave. And I think she said they wound up just leaving and going home. Like, he didn't want to be in the same movie theater with a guy that was smoking weed. And actually this one isn't in the book. Valerie told me this when Hulk Hogan died. Because obviously that was too late to make it in the book. But she said, because I was asking, like, what was his relationship like with Hogan? And she told me this story about how Hulk Hogan had a big party at his house in Florida. This was at the peak of everything. And everybody went down there, everybody from the WWF. And so Gino and Maureen were there. And at one point in the party, everybody went upstairs. And they were all doing drugs, probably coke. I don't know. They were all going upstairs and doing drugs. And Gino turned to Maureen and just said, let's go home. Let's get out of here. And they just left. And they just went back supposedly to the hotel or back home. You know, he saw a lot of stuff that he didn't like and that he had to tolerate. So I guess that would be, you know, one of the things.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff, man.
Yeah. We've been chatting with Brian R. Solomon. Of course, the book is, let me make sure I get the name right. Irresistible Force, The Life and Times Gorilla Monsoon.
That's right.
September 30th. So we only got a couple more weeks before that hits the stands.
September 30th in print and digital. And it already hit number one on Amazon's list of wrestling books, which would have been only based on pre-sales. So, yep. So
that's why I put available now. I want people to go look for it right now.
Pre-sell it. AJ Lee knocked me off there a little bit when she came back on television. Her book shot up to number one. But the audiobook, I got to say, too, because a lot of people ask me about it, because I'm still working on it, it's going to take a little longer to come out because they got to do editing and all that stuff. So I don't have a date yet, but I'm thinking if I had to randomly guess, I would say maybe November, but I don't know that for sure.
And, of course, Shut Up and Wrestle on the Arcadian Vanguard Network. Brian Solomon's always talking to some of the greats, some of the people you may know, some of the people you may not know. I know he likes to pepper in a lot of folks from the 605 universe in there. A lot of interesting characters always on that show. It's always a great listen. Speaking of which, is any word 605 ever coming back? Kind of miss that show.
You know, everyone misses that show. Everybody, that show really roped me in when I heard that. It was unlike anything I ever heard before. Just this magazine show about wrestling history, and it's got the wrestling version of Howard Stern on there with all comedy bits and impressions. I'm just like, no one's doing anything like this. And you know, Brian Last is an insanely busy guy.
Yep,
and I work for him, so I know. And the Cornette thing, I know, just is all consuming. Doing Jim's shows and things is a lot of work, and I know that he wants to. I can't speak for him, and from talking to him, I think there have been things in the works, like segments that he's worked on and things he's been trying to find time for, but I just don't know if, you know, there's only so much time in the day. I know he wants to do it. If he'll ever find the time, that's the whole question.
Gotcha. Don't forget, there's a book about Godzilla. There's a book about superheroes. There's the book that we touted a couple years ago about the original Sheik. Brian Solomon covers everything. Before we let you go, any indications, anybody that you talk to that may have stirred up the next topic that you're going to be pursuing?
I don't even want to say, because I've really been enjoying the break from books, because I did those three books right on top of each other without a break. And I'm waiting until this whole thing dies down before I even start anything. So I've thought about, honestly, I've thought a little bit about doing a non-wrestling book next. I might try to do a novel, which I've never tried before, or a memoir like about my family, something like a really personal thing. I don't know. If it's something wrestling related, I'll say this. One thing that I've thought about a lot, but it takes a lot. It's an expensive book to produce, especially these days. I would love to do a coffee table book, like an art book, except about wrestling magazines, the history of wrestling magazines. You know how you see those ones they do about comic books, those big giant hardcovers, and they take you through all the classic covers and the layouts? Like, I would love to do that with wrestling magazines, but, and I've tried to pitch it, but like I said, very expensive, because it's got to be hardcover, nice slick paper, the whole thing, big in size. And then they're thinking, like, are enough people going to buy this to justify the cost? So I don't know if that'll ever happen, but I'd love to. That's one of my top wrestling ideas of what to do, for sure.
Well, that would be amazing. And I know four fellas who would absolutely pick up that book, just like we're going to be picking up the Gorilla Monsoon book. At Brian R. Solomon on the Twitter machine, patreon.com/shutupandwrestle. Like I told you, I listen to the show. I can't recommend it enough. It's a great show. I can't recommend Brian Solomon's literary style enough. Make sure you get on that Gorilla Monsoon book September 30th. And then the audio copy is going to be coming somewhere too. Pick up both. Drive around. Listen to Brian. He's got a soothing voice.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for soothing us.
All right. My pleasure. Happy to do it.
Thanks again, Brian. Good luck with everything. I'm sure the book is going to do just fine by all the indications. And keep on keeping on, brother. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. So long. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Thanks again, Brian. Be well. Brian Solomon, a gem in the wrestling world.
Oh, that was so great. That's so amazing.
He's awesome.
What an interview. Yeah. Like, I normally don't ask a lot of things, but it's just so nice to, like, sit back and listen to the knowledge he has and all the great stories. So
it's funny to me
another hour.
I don't think I ever thought that I would have something in common with Gorilla Monsoon, but as you fellas know, I'm a huge Grease guy. Huge Grease guy. So
I'm surprised Gorilla. You didn't bring it up.
What? I love Grease, man. Love it. Big fan.
Brundo, I love Grease. Take that a bunch of ways.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
Wow. Okay. You know
it
what?
Doesn't
though?
Surprise me, Mr. Anti Larry Zbysko's got no fucking taste. You're probably a dirty dancing bitch, aren't you?
No.
My grandfather used to tell a joke like, hey, if Italy invaded Switzerland from behind, would Greece help? It was something like that. It was Italy and Greece, and it was always like, you know.
It's a good line.
Yeah, I wish I didn't fuck it all up.
No, I think that was the line.
Yeah, Tony, I think you'll have more opportunities to fuck it up when I get back from chugging and plugging.
We would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in each week to The Shining Wizards. Here are some other ways in which you can support the show. If you shop at Amazon, visit amazon.shiningwizards.com and shop the way you always do. You'll pay the same low prices, and a portion of your purchase will help support the show. If you'd like to buy a Shining Wizards t-shirt, visit merch.shiningwizards.com to visit our pro wrestling tee store and select from over a dozen great designs. You can also become a Patreon supporter at patreon.shiningwizards.com, where we offer bonus content, producer credits, and so much more. Continue to listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and watch along live on social media. And don't forget to like, rate, review, and subscribe. Your continued support helps us to continue to bring you the best in professional wrestling podcasting. It's time for your weekly lineup of shows on the Shining Wizards Network. Start your week with the latest from Gorilla Brain, featuring the year of Duke and Rogue, covering a year's worth of classic wrestling. And the Tots Pod, introducing the world to wrestling figure collecting. Follow up with 30 Screams or Less, a weekly review of horror movies in 30 minutes or less. And the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling. The Network Week continues with the Mark Order, your place for everything AEW, and the ROH Revelry, covering everything in the history of Ring of Honor. Later, it's Radioactive Metal, bringing you everything from the world of heavy metal music. An inconclusive breakdown, keeping you up to date on everything happening in the world. The Shining Wizards Network is also the home to other great shows, like The Brocast, your watch-along podcast from Down Under, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, paying homage to the greatest shows in the history of pro wrestling, Wrestling Night in Canada, a focus on wrestling with a North of the Border spin, and Going Underground, a show that takes you back through the history of Lucha Underground. Enjoy all of the amazing shows on the Shining Wizards Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. It's the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
You want to fight. You want to become a champion. But face facts, you suck. But you don't have to suck. And you won't suck when you train with the best. Train at the Wizards Wrestling School. We'll train you in all forms of combat, including Japanese wrestling and wrestling in pudding with no clothes on. Got $5,000? We'll take your $5,000 and train you to be a champion. Maybe. Got what it takes? Join us on the mean streets of Morristown and find out if you got what it takes to win championships. It's the Wizards Wrestling School, taking money and taking names.
I want a championship belt like that, like a vest.
I think it's badass, yeah.
That looks cool as shit.
That would be amazing.
Speaking of amazing, Brundo.
All right, yeah. So we got the Wizards Street Team coming up. If you were at a wrestling show, I don't have it here, but the newest member, Deb, was in Pennsylvania last week. Hopefully a lot of people saw her. Upcoming, we got Lisa going to be at MLB Fightland in Rich Hills, Texas.
MLW.
See, I told this guy I was going to fuck it up, even though it was right in front of me. And goddamn, I did. So, and then you can find SJ at September 19th, Invoke Pro Wrestling Canadian Deathmatch. And then the next night at AEW All Out in Toronto. And October 11th, WPW Rumble in the BERT. So make sure you find these fine women at these shows. Get some Shining Wizards merch. And, yeah, that's that. They do an amazing job, that's for sure.
You know, there's a lot of fine look. There's a lot of fine looking women in the world, but most of them don't bring you lasagna at work. Most of them just cheat on you.
Great, fantastic line.
Clerks, HK.
Clerks, yeah.
I didn't get that.
After you said it, I understand. Yeah. I get it.
I have a love hate relationship with this green screen.
I think it looks great.
Well, thank you.
Also, SJ says October 19th.
Yeah.
Well, that's Matt's fault.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll just blame Matt.
Throw that bitch under the bus.
Fucking double T.
The rest of the Italians.
His fucking tank his fucking tank top that he wore kept us out of Adam's Tavern. I got aggravated listening to you guys talk about that all over again.
Yeah, it was a situation, man.
Look, fuck you. My fucking day off. You think I'm putting on a shirt with sleeves? I think I drooled myself.
I still never been to Adam's Tavern either.
And you probably never will, Brundo.
Probably never will. Yeah, because next year we're going to go-karting and Caribbean, right, Tony?
Caribbean? Why, you want to eat Caribbean food next year?
Yeah, why not? I don't know. That's...
I mentioned that Lucha place that I think you would like.
You know, a lot of people say that. They think I'd like things. I don't like a lot of stuff.
Mm. Yeah. I know you like Mexican food.
That's true.
I know you like Mexican wrestling.
You got me there.
You got me there, three for three.
You got me. 3 for 3, Brundlefly. Brundlefly, what do you got on tap next, man? What do you want?
What's on tap?
Let's see.
Hey, you want to talk about AEW? I don't.
Nope. I watched some.
Did you you didn't see the return happen into AEW this week?
What, the return of the Mac?
No. A big return that's going to make Handsome Kevin happy.
Oh, you talk about the asshole that got hurt already?
Nope.
Oh.
To the castle!
Oh, shit!
On AEW or Ring of Honor?
AEW.
Wow. Oh,
on AEW, on Collision, they had a promo package, promo with the Outrunners out in the jungle, basically, you know, like doing Predator style.
Okay.
And everything. And they're like, they said something, and they're like, oh, we need help for this. And then it cuts straight. Here come the boys out of the fucking jungle. It cuts right to Daunton Castle. He's ready to break some hearts, boys.
Yes,
and
I'm in.
They do the triple son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. I'm pumped.
I got to ask a question. I thought the boys got fired because they were complaining about their transportation one time.
Oh, there's other boys. There's been a million boys.
Yeah, I was going to say, Petey Brown was a boy.
Yeah, the fucking War Raiders were boys one show.
Yeah.
Reed Dragon were boys. Milwaukee Tom's first Ring of Honor show.
Did you call them Reed Dragon?
Yeah, that's how I always read it, Reed Dragon.
Please write that down.
You got it. Man.
Well, I'm excited. Is he just going to be on Collision, though?
Oh, this was on Collision?
Yeah, this was aired on
Collision. Oh, yeah, they're fucked. They're going right to fucking Ring of Honor, dude. They're trying to pull Ring of Honor viewers, and they're like, hey, go watch.
But I will go back and watch Collision just for To the Castle. Whereabouts in the show did he land? Because he should be in the main event.
He was somewhere in the... somewhere in the 9 o'clock hour. I mean, you can find it right on Twitter too. They put the whole thing up, but
yeah. I'm in.
We got that. Big Bill called out Eddie Kingston.
Cheeseburger Eddie.
He's coming back and coming back soon. So,
do you give a shit about that or no?
I do. I love Eddie Kingston.
Huh.
He can make me care about anything in wrestling. Like he could be Dalton wrestling in a locker room. I mean, 1A, 1B. I love both of them.
Oh, B. Yeah,
Why do I have to be more excited for one or the other?
Come on, Brundlefly. You know in your heart that Dalton Castle is five times the talent Eddie Kingston wish he was.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh, fuck you, ass. That was for Double T. Man, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit to the castle. I did watch a little bit of Dynamite.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
How long until you turned it off?
I saw Darby put some jack off in a bag.
Some jack off? It's Gabe Kidd, who they treat as some jack off.
Like I said, he put some jack off in a bag. Yeah. He drives away in a truck. That bullshit. And the fuck? Like he goes over and he hangs over the side of a pickup truck and acts like he's fucked up. And then he turns around and he's got the rag with it. So like he set the rag with the chemical in the truck, knowing that at a certain point they were going to battle to the truck. And then he's going to be ready.
Why are the fire extinguishers under the ring? Why is this? Kendo
because there could be a fire at any moment.
All right, there's fine. Pyro. Why is the kendo stick under the ring? It's fucking. Because
there could be a karate tournament at any moment. Any moment could break karate out, Brundlefly.
2025. Yeah,
come on, don't be ridiculous. And then I watched. God, what they went into Monet and Windsor.
Yeah, that was God, fine.
She sucks. No, that was bad. Yeah.
You think so?
Does she still have 14 independent belts?
Yeah, 27, and they line the ropes with them now.
Gives a shit.
Cool visual.
It's horrible.
I get it. If you owned a company, why would you not want one of your championships on TV? But she shouldn't be giving them fucking publicity, dude.
That sucks.
This is why AEW is just a fucking other indie promotion.
There's absolutely no reaction either. She comes out.
They work with CMLL, so I get them doing that one. Rev Pro, they work with.
Yeah, but like you hear Jackoff's going like, oh, fucking Ultimo Dragon did it. Ultimo Dragon was winning major championships from major promotions. You know what I'm saying? Like it was like CMLL, New Japan, WWF. Like there were promotions everywhere that he was winning titles from.
And they were already all together when Ultimo won them too.
It wasn't like NWA fart side in fucking buttfuck Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? Like... And the fucking Owen Hart title, it's not even a title. It's just a fucking trophy.
Yeah, but it's a trophy that's a title.
She really is a fucking tard.
Are you excited for the other small girl return that happened after that?
So that's, I was going to mention that. I was going to mention that. So you probably word that a little bit differently. But so I didn't like the match. I'm Windsor. I don't, every time she goes Windsor, it bothers me. I'm out. And now they got that Chode fucking ring announcer announcing him as Windsor.
Oh, Justin Robertson. He sucks hard. He always has.
Not good. Not good. She does this variation of the sharpshooter. That's not good. At one point they're both on the mat and she's just holding both of her legs. And it's not even like she's fighting to set up to put her in the submission move. She's just laying back and holding both of her legs. And what are you doing? Get out of here. I like the thought behind putting the sharpshooter on her with them, with Monet underneath the bottom rope and kind of using that rope for leverage, but it doesn't look good. You know what I mean? Like if you can do it and make it look good, it's one thing. If you do it and it's shit, don't do it. And you should know prior to doing it, if it's going to look like shit or if it's going to look good.
Wait, Oh, go ahead, Tony.
I just want to know, like, she put on a sharpshooter while Windsor was under the ropes?
Fucking Moan was under the ropes.
So Windsor did it to her?
Yeah. Yep.
But how does that even work? Like, are the ropes even affecting
Not
her?
Well. Not well. It looked
like... But, like, is she tied in the ropes? Is her throat on the ropes?
No, Tony, think of it like this. She is... Monet is on... the essentially upper body is inside the ring, lower body is outside the ring. So she kind of puts that sharpshooter on to use that bottom rope as would be leverage. You know what I mean? To kind of add to the crank of the back there. But what happens is fucking Windsor is sitting on the goddamn rope. It does nothing. And it just looks like hell. It was fucking irritating. Didn't like it. That can eat a shit. And then the match is over. It's over. I'm done with the match. And then Rio comes out and I'm back. I'm back because I love Rio.
I was not expecting that.
She dances on the sand. I fucking love Rio.
I mean, I know Rio, it's going to be, it's probably going to be one and quick, but I love seeing her back. I've always been a big fan of Rio. So I expected Peeta before Rito. I was surprised.
Cheetah versus... Wait, what?
Cheetah. I was expecting her to come back and challenge Moan.
I like Rio, man. I like that when it's so believable when she is taking... She's just... She throws caution to the wind, but not in a careless way. And when she bumps, it draws amazing sympathy. I don't see her... She shouldn't be a world champion or anything like that. I enjoy her style. I really do. So, I watched, that's what I watched of AEW. And then I had to go away from it. But Castle's back. Okay. Rio's back. All right. I might make two or three segments next week. We'll see, Brundlefly.
I mean, they got a new commentator starting this week. Daniel Bryan back in the, or Bryan Danielson back in the, is one of the people in the booth. So
anything to keep fucking Nards off commentary.
I think he is replacing Shivani. So
Shivani. I was talking about the other Daddy Nards.
What's this fuck with Daniel Garcia?
Yeah.
Oh, he's only on like when Garcia is on at this point. Daddy Magic.
Bad idea. Eh. Bad idea.
They all suck.
So we got AEW, the all-in card shaping up at this point.
Wait, is that this weekend?
No, it's 2 weeks. Not this weekend, next weekend.
Oh, then I call bullshit. There's no way this card is shaping up with 2 weeks to go.
No.
Here's what we got.
Four matches or no? More or less?
More.
Really?
24.
AEW is actually planning more than fucking three matches before a pay-per-view?
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
So we got Hangman versus Kyle Fletcher at the top for the world title.
Ugh.
Cope and Christian versus FTR, and I think that's going to actually close the show in Toronto. Cope and Christian, the first time they fucking team together, and
is it a lights out hypodermic needle kick to the dick match?
No, it's just a tag team match.
Oh, it's a Toronto Thunderdome Stampede match.
Wait, a Thunderdome Stampede match?
Yeah.
Two Jeez, things I couldn't give less of a shit about.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Canadian maple syrup slam.
See, I would. Oh my god, a maple slam.
Yeah.
Color me stuck for that one.
Oh my god, could you imagine the fucking money Denny's would make putting that on their menu? The maple slam. It's just a stack of seven pancakes with a fucking big pitcher of maple syrup, and you just fucking wabba.
Wabba. Ki! Kapow!
They After bring you that. A fucking they bring you whipped butter. It's just an ice cream scoop of butter on the top. Oh my god. That's a fucking maple slam, dude. I want to see FTR and fucking Cope and Hope fucking there dragging each other through that shit. I'm sorry, Brundle. Go ahead. Yes.
No worries. I'm writing down maple slam right now.
Kapow! Wabba!
Okay. So we got already made it official Mercedes Moné versus Rio.
Wait, she comes back and she's getting a title shot already, or did she win some tournament that I missed?
I was gonna say what she I guess she hasn't had any losses, so that might put her in the number one.
Oh, she's like 2-0 since she came back.
No, she hasn't
been there since 2024. So yeah, no losses. we got the Hurt Syndicate versus Ricochet and the Gates of Agony.
Wait. Ricochet and the Gate. So it's Hurt Syndicate is with MJF or no?
No, MVP, Bobby Lashley and Benjamin.
MVP's wrestling?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, they trot him out there for once or twice a year.
I might tune in for that.
Yeah. We got a coffin match. John Moxley and Darby Allin.
Oh, great. Is Moxley going to go like this when he's fucking choking again?
I hope so. We got a four-way for the women's title. Tony Storm.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, versus Tekla versus Jamie Hayter versus Chris Statlander.
Ooh, the Buttlander and the Spider Lady and fucking 70s hair.
Hell yeah. And then we got MJF versus Mark Briscoe. Stipulation to be determined.
Oh, he's going to kick him in his wiener.
I'm excited. However, I won't be able to watch. I'll be at Slayer that night, so that won't be happening.
Raining blood.
Oh, yeah, with Damian Priest hosting the Slayer concert.
Is he really?
Yeah. So
that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, my son's first Slayer concert. My first Slayer concert, so should be good shit.
Is there anybody still? All the original guys are still in Slayer?
I couldn't tell you. I just know it's Slayer, and I want to be there for it.
You know, it's not like one of these like 70s doo-wop bands where like there's like one original member who's like 85, and all the other ones are like everybody's grandkids.
Well, that's what Leonard Skinner is now. I don't even think there's an original member left in them when they tour.
Of course.
Yeah, it should be we play Leonard Skinner. Leonard presents Leonard Skinner.
I've been calling them Pieces of Skinner for a long time. I fucking hate that band. Not a fan.
Yeah, Freebird's a little fucking like.
Yeah.
I don't even dig Freebird.
Nope.
Neither. I hate listening to it on the radio. I hate when somebody fucking plays it in Rock Band or on fucking festival. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know what to do with Yestercade next time.
No, you will not. They charge you by the hour, you fuck.
We're going go-kart racing.
Yes. Oh, matter of fact, I don't know how good it's going to be. But right down the road from me, they're planning on building a virtual go-kart racing place. So you don't even get in the cars. You just fucking put on the helmet, get in the box. You're good to go. They used to have.
I put on the helmet and get on the box a lot. I'm joking. I don't wear a helmet.
Hey, you're an ass
that
man.
That explains a lot.
Years ago, Brundo, I don't know if you remember at the Palisades Mall up in Nyack, they used to have the NASCAR simulator.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
So you literally get in what looks like a kind of like a markup of a NASCAR, and there's screens all around you, and you just get on the track and drive, and you can get, I think it used to be up to like 16 people on the track. Well, back in my youth, when I was getting married as part of my bachelor party festivities, my friends rented that out for like 2 hours. It was just us. And when you rent it out, they turn the safeties off. So instead of just going around the track in one direction, you can go any which way you fucking want. So I hear my brother next to me fucking throws a 180. He starts going the other way. I hear, Hi, Kenny. Bam. Kenny had to hit the emergency button and get out of his car. I go, Kenny, okay? Yeah, except for the part when I fucking felt like I was going to throw up all over myself.
I did. I was actually at a bachelor party for, they have the actual racetrack down there with the go-karts. And I realized how terrible of a go-kart driver I was, where we did like five races and I finished last five times.
Well, that was my kid. So you guys have about the same driving acumen. Actually, it was him. It was him. And there was a Karen racing. I think somebody's mother felt bad that her kids were racing, so she joined them. Always looked on the board. It was fucking, it was my kid and Karen, always like 15th and 16th.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I thought I was good until I cracked my ribs. That sucked. It was fucking the
stories
worst,
are like that.
The worst 6 weeks of my life. Fucking every time I tried to get up, it's like, you motherfucker.
I hope you didn't get hiccups.
No, it sucked. Hiccups, coughs, laying the wrong way in bed. Couldn't lay on my side for like 3-4 weeks. Oof. It was just awful. You put pressure on them, it's not bad. The minute you take the pressure away, it's like somebody kicked you in the ribs again. It's
boy, speaking of awful, you guys want to get into homework?
Oh, oh shit. Oh, fuck me. Wow.
I was going to go someplace else with there, but.
Oh, Brundlefly, you assigned the homework this week.
I certainly did.
Tell us why and what you assigned.
I assigned Spike Dudley versus Mike Awesome, Guilty as Charged 2000. If I had to build a top five wrestlers from ECW, Mike Awesome and Spike Dudley were in the top two, or top three every single fucking time. Absolutely love Spike Dudley the whole time. Mike Awesome comes in throwing people through fucking tables. Just a monster. So those guys were the best. Loved every single fucking time they wrestled. I thought they were like perfect. Spike Dudley was the perfect opponent for Mike to make him just look like a fucking monster. So I thought this match would be just the best part of that. So, and, you know, I wasn't disappointed at all, but I have a feeling somebody else was by the look on his fucking face up there to the right.
I'll just start with a comment and I'm going to let HK just fucking run.
Please.
Of all the wrestlers in ECW history, Spike and Mike Love Awesome in your top three?
Yeah.
In all history.
Number one is always going to be Taz.
So Taz, Mike Awesome, and Spike Dudley, they're like
one,
your fucking
two and three.
They're like your fucking meatballs of ECW. I couldn't go fucking go Mount Rushmore. All right, I'm gonna yield.
Say they're the Mount Rushmores, but
no, because there's only three of them.
For me,
HK, I yield the floor to the distinguished gentleman from Minnesota.
Tony, I don't get it with Brundlefly, man. I want to like him. I want to like him. I do. I think he's a nice guy. He doesn't watch Grease. He loves AEW. He assigned shitty homework. And then he tells me his top three guys in ECW are Taz, Spike Dudley, and Mike Awesome.
Another aside, I completely forgot Spike Dudley had a girlfriend that was involved.
Oh,
she doesn't
yeah.
have teeth. That's Brenda Fleisch, number one ECW valet. Spike Dudley's toothless
no,
girlfriend.
No. She's way down the line of ECW.
No, Brundlefly, don't lie now. I couldn't like you less.
Feelings mutual, pal.
What the fuck is going on over here? Not Tommy Dreamer. No, not Rob Van Dam. Not him either. Not Raven. Don't even mention him because it's Spike fucking Dudley.
Fuck yeah. Did you watch ECW in the 90s?
Yeah, and
it was amazing.
I had to work to watch ECW because we didn't get this shit out here. And I didn't work my balls off to try and watch ECW to see Spike fucking Dudley.
It's Spike was in so many of the classic fucking moments in ECW, getting thrown into the crowd, all the Dudley matches. Fucking loved him. Fucking loved everything he did.
He was the Riho of ECW. Without the tits.
I like tits.
I love tits.
Who doesn't love tits?
Spike didn't have tits.
Tits rule.
His girlfriend didn't have tits either.
I was going to ask you. I don't think she had much of an ass either.
Tell. She's in overalls.
You can still tell.
Mike Awesome's Canadian too, isn't he?
No.
No.
He's not?
Florida. No, oh, he was part of Team Canada in WCW, but he's not Canadian.
Yeah.
I say maybe he's doing some maple slams.
Come on! Shikanky! So I watched the promo earlier in the event where Spike Dudley just starts cussing up a storm, which doesn't do much for me.
He it never cut doesn't. Promos before this, right?
No, he never really did.
No.
Oh, they had to fucking save it for a gem like this.
Right. So I watched that and it just took me out of the Spike character. Like, I didn't want to see that version of Spike. Yeah. That's not who I wanted to see. I wanted to see if you're going to play the underdog, really play up the good guy underdog, which you didn't do. And I get it. He's pissed off because Mike Awesome tried to make his girlfriend look pretty. Like, it just didn't work. Didn't work.
But it worked. It makes sense. If he's going to cut a scathing, pissed off promo, the guy knocked his girlfriend's teeth out. What's he going to say? Oh, I'm going to beat you for the title because I want to be world champion. No, I want to fuck you up because you fucked up my girlfriend.
Don't give him the mic. Don't have him promo Brundlefly.
He's got a promo.
That's more. He doesn't have to promo in this situation. He doesn't have to. You can still keep that good guy, knowing that he's standing up for his toothless, titless broad. Right? That's what he's doing.
Toothless, titless broad. Can we add that to the list?
The match itself was a fucking glorified squash match. He threw them all around. Like, how many times do I got to see one guy go through a fucking table?
And this motherfucker set up all of his coffins to get buried in.
Sure, sure. He grabbed some jackass ringing guy to go, hey, help me with all these. I'm setting up tables. Help me. I'm Spike Dudley. Help me. I like Mike Awesome, right? If you would have said Mike Awesome top five, I probably would have let it slide, but you didn't. You said Spike and Mike Awesome top three. Unacceptable. Yeah. I like Mike Awesome. And I understand this would have been a good match for like ECW TV, right? This would have been a good match, but I don't think that you can really build Spike Dudley as a viable contender against Mike Awesome. I don't think it can be done.
I think you can do that. And I think they did a great fucking job on commentary building them, saying all the giants that came through ECW, Bam Bam Bigelow, beat fucking Viscera, beat One Man Gang, beat Bubba Ray Dudley, like all the giants, Spike Dudley beats them. So it's convincing that this fucking big giant of a man, Mike Awesome, Spike Dudley has the proven track record where he could be the David to his Goliath.
So why didn't they give us a glimmer of hope in this match then?
They certainly did.
Nah, they didn't give us any
hope. They had a couple of glimmer. He would fight back. He gave him the acid drop to the outside through the table.
After a low blow.
Yeah, sure. It's ECW.
Yeah.
But he had a couple of hope spots. He definitely had one towards the end where a lot of people bit on, but
this was 12 minutes of Spike Dudley getting his ass thrown through tables.
Yeah, more or less. But then, Spike would fight back for a bit, him with chairs, and then Mike would go do Mike things.
Yeah.
HK, your favorite spot of the match, cuz I know mine.
The end?
No. Come on. Think about it.
I think probably, well, see, and I hate that he did it, but I love when Mike Awesome jumped to the outside and fell on his ass.
Yep. Correct. When his feet went out from under him, I thought he cracked his skull. I was like, Mike Awesome just died.
Well, you shouldn't be doing this shit anyways. Like, you're a monster facing this fucking little guy. Just fucking beat the shit out of him.
I fucking hate fucking twat nose on this fucking thing with Joey Styles, but I will give them credit.
Callous, yeah.
When they called and they said that this was one of those things where Mike Awesome doesn't do things like that, but when he does, you take a big risk, and he fucking probably cracked his skull, so was it worth it? And it fed into the story better than other shit, like when fucking Cyrus just yells at Joey, goes, then shut up. I would have been like, yo, fuck you and your mother, dude.
I mean, that's what they were doing at that point.
So yeah, but you yell shut up at the guy. Like I understand you want to like get one over on him, but like, why would you just try to embarrass your fucking, your the guy in the booth with you at the same time? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like Jesse would call out dumb shit. Like he wouldn't fucking tell Gorilla Monsoon to fucking go fuck himself. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, they kind of paid that off pretty soon after this too, with Gertner and Styles. I believe they beat the shit out of Cyrus pretty soon after this.
Yeah, but we don't need gimmick stories in the booth. Like I hated when when Michael Cole was doing that shit with Jerry Lawler, and you know they had the shit with Taz and fucking and Jim Ross and shit. Like I don't dig that stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's what Cyrus was. He was the network guy. In there, I'm not saying it's good. I mean, you know, that's what he was doing. That was Paulie's way of getting back at the network for fucking them over.
How long was the build to this?
I don't know. Probably at least a month or so.
Really? Interesting.
I would think, yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I'm not anti-Spike. I'm not anti-Spike. I like Spike. Not top three ECW, but I like Spike and I like Mike Awesome, but at no point when I was watching this match, was there anything that stuck out to me where I really was like, all right, now I'm in. And was it even 12 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was. Okay.
Yeah. 12 minutes bell to bell for sure.
And it seemed like kind of a letdown to end the card with a match where Spike just gets his ass kicked. I mean, like, I wanted real, true hope spots throughout the match, and I never felt like I got anything that made me believe that Spike was going to be in a position where he could win the match. So in your main event, with the belt on the line, with the monster, with this guy that's supposed to be the guy that knows how to beat the monsters, I wanted something that I could really believe that and I just never got it.
And stories recently were that Paulie wanted to put the belt on Spike had he not gotten hurt.
Yeah, I believe it's this match where he busted his leg. And Paulie told him afterwards, like, had you not been hurt, I probably would have put the belt on you instead of Taz. So I would have fucking loved that.
Well,
yeah, one thing I'll say about Mike Awesome, too, is I always say, like, when we watch the ECW matches, how great the ring sounds. It just makes everything he does look even more brutal, the sound of that ring. Yeah, every clothesline, every slam, every fucking splash, everything.
The clotheslines looked awesome.
Yes.
The first one, he almost goddamn took his fucking head off. Like, you could tell it was not low. I mean, it's hard for a 6'8 guy to get low on somebody like Spike Dudley, but man, it looked like he fucking murdered him.
Yeah, that last one too, right before the finish. Before he power bombs him off too. It was just another one where he just takes his fucking head off.
What was the move he did to the outside? I don't think it was the acid drop. I think it was later where they were like, now he's got to get Mike Awesome up as Mike Awesome's getting up on his own.
That was the acid drop through the table. He's choking him with the wires and everything.
Oh man. I was, when he was choking him with the wires, I was so worried because one of the legs of the table, when it broke, it went straight up and I went, well, somebody's getting their ass fucked on that. They're getting their ass fucked on that thing. That's one thing that worries me about those type of spots. When you get the legs of the table in spots they shouldn't be, I was like, somebody's got to clear that shit. This is a safety concern here. But
yeah,
it's not. Yeah, I don't know Brundlefly. I don't know about this. Did anybody get Double T send notes about the homework?
Oh, fucking hand job.
That fucking asshole.
I mean, if he sent an email, I probably deleted it anyway.
Knowing the champ or the ECW fan he is, I have a feeling he would enjoy this.
All right, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say Matt goes thumbs up. HK, I'm going to let you go. What are you calling on this one? Do we keep the streak? Is the streak over?
Come on. Let's keep it going.
Can't do it, Brundlefly. Can't do it, man. I needed more belief in Spike Dudley in the match. I never got the belief that he was going to, I mean, even some sneaky some sneaky get on top and actually fire up. Like, I never felt that throughout the match.
You don't think when he was outside and he's hitting them with the chairs over and over again, he's firing up?
No, because the crowd didn't even give a shit about this match. Right. I think the crowd even knew it was a foregone conclusion.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a downer.
I'm not going to be as harsh as HK. I think like this was a mistake putting this on pay-per-view. I think this would have been a fine TV main event. I could see Spike winning the title in a different universe, not on pay-per-view. Then again, this is also ECW and not such a great time. However, I will say like I enjoyed a bit of the match. It didn't go completely over for me, so I'm going to go in the middle on this one.
I'll take that. And I feel like at this time, Mike was running out of challengers at this point, too.
Yeah, he was.
Like you had, the Impact players and Dreamer and Raven are all like, all like huddled up together.
Because
Taz is gone.
Yeah, RBD's that's the thing. Hurt. Taz is gone. The Dudleys are gone. Like a lot of guys are just fucking wandering around now.
Rhino and challenges them.
Yeah, and ECW is struggling to bring up some of the new guys like the Carinos and the fucking CW Andersons and shit like that. And a lot of those guys, as much of a following they had, they weren't getting over to the degree that the original ECW stars were.
They just weren't.
They weren't. It was a very tough time for ECW. And one more question. Why the fuck did this show end like 20 seconds after Mike Awesome won? Like the show only ran 2.5 hours. What was the rush?
It was probably they had to be off the air at that point.
It was just
it's the pay-per-view. It's a pay-per-view time, so they probably just literally had to be off the air at that point.
And now that's Mike Awesome's WWE music, right? Because he used that music for One Night Stand.
One Night Stand, yeah. And, I believe that was his.
Yeah, and Spike, it kind of sounded like Highway to Hell a little bit if you really think about it.
That hurt. That one hurt because I love anytime I'd heard his music.
But it also hurt like him cutting an interview and him like having these assholes point tables. Like why wouldn't you just make it a fucking tables match and just say like, look, ECW was always known like it's a ladder match. There's not a prize at the top of the ring. The ladders are in play. Like that was the ladder match. You can use the ladder to do whatever the fuck you want. You could jump off. You could beat the shit out of each other with it. That was the ECW ladder match. Why didn't they just have an ECW tables match? You don't win by going through a table. We just put a shit ton of tables because Mike Awesome wants to murder people.
That's fair. Yeah, as long as it doesn't end it, like the 2 out of 3 tables or something like that, that's fair.
And if you want to have Spike cut a promo, have him cut it on TV like the week before the pay-per-view. And he's like, you put everybody through tables. He's like, I'm going to make your life easier. I'm going to have them put tables at ringside, but you better watch because I've been known to put a few men your size through a few tables myself. And if I put you through one, it's going to be lights out or some shit like that. Right. Give me something. You know what I mean? Instead of just like, you come over here, help me carry this. Like, it just accentuated the fact that Spike was just kind of fucking lost, you know, like, oh, I need your help.
I will say too, this was actually, I scrambled for this one. This was actually my third choice because I had 2 YouTube videos saved.
And oh, don't spoil them.
No, they're gone. They got taken off of fucking YouTube.
Oh.
They're coming back, so.
Well, I got the 2 killers from last time, but go ahead. Let us know what you had.
I had Roderick Strong versus James Gibson in ROH, and it was Gibson's farewell match. And what was it? The Steiners and Vader and Bam Bam from New Japan. And it got fucking taken down.
You should have went with that one, bro.
If it was on there, I absolutely would have. But, yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Speaking of
New Japan takes everything down. So.
Well, Handsome Kevin, with the streak starts anew.
Yeah, yes. What boring fucking Larry Zbyszko match are we watching this week?
It's going to be Larry Zbyszko against fucking Bobby.
Listen to this guy. Listen to this guy. We are going back to the ECW arena.
Oh, no. But this is going to be some fucking other show.
Just wait. We are going.
Petey Brown wins some fucking independent title.
We're going to the ECW arena, South Philadelphia, on September 7th. Of 2008.
Yeah, it's Petey beating Stonehenge for the fucking go fuck yourself title.
No, it's fucking WWECW.
It is Shakara.
Ooh.
All right.
Oh, wait, wait, wait. I'm starting to moonstem. Go for it.
It is Claudio versus Brody in a steel cage.
All right, you brought
me back. In Shakara? In Shakara.
Yep.
No title. No champion de champion or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, champion de, you know, it's the Anthill Championship.
They didn't have a singles title until like 2000, until the 2010s, I think.
And who was their first singles champion?
Eddie Kingston, baby.
I actually went to the Cibernetico when they had it. I forget who the fuck won, but the big deal was it was Team Shakara, which was Eddie Kingston captaining, and Team Ring of Honor, which was Kevin Steen.
Yep.
And Eddie beat Kevin Steen to eliminate him from the Cibernetico. That was a hell of a show. I had a ton of fun at that show.
That's not surprising. Their Cibernetico's were fucking great. Their Young Lion Cups. You just look at some of those Trios Cups that they had.
Oh, they had a bunch of Trios matches. I want to say like X-Pac, and I forget who was on his team. Maybe Just Incredible. It was, I don't remember.
I think it was X-Pac. Yeah, it was like the Minnesota crew. I think it was X-Pac with Eric Cannon and Darren Corbin.
Yeah.
And they fought when like...
Cannon was doing the Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah. And they fought like Hakushi and Sasuke and I think some Dick Togo.
Huh.
So... Yeah, a lot of that was just, they had one where it was fucking Demolition and the One Man Gang were a team wrestling on this. The fucking guy in the front row has an Akeem hat and they got him to dance in it.
Yeah, this was it. Team Kingston was Eddie with 3.0, which was Scott Parker, Shane Matthews, Tim Donst, I remember, Gran Akuma, and Frightmare, Hollow Wicked, and Ultramantis Black. That's a big team. Takes on Team Steen, Kevin Steen, the Bravado Brothers, the Briscoes, the Jacksons, and Jimmy Jacobs. What a fucking team, dude.
That's amazing.
I don't think I've ever sat down and watched Shakara and not been entertaining. Like, not been entertained by what was in front of me. There's always like an element of fun somewhere along the way, and there was always an element of good wrestling, and there's always an element of personality. Like, it was a fun promotion, man.
It really was. Yeah. It made a lot of people these days had some roots in Shakara, so.
Yeah. Well, Quack's got a hell of a mind, man. Hell of a mind. Yeah.
Too bad it's untouchable these days.
You can't touch it?
Dun, 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 dun.
I wouldn't. Nobody's going to touch his mind these days.
Can't touch Quack. Can't touch Quack.
go.
I'm actually going to see some of those... You mentioned like the Legion of Rot guys this weekend. I'm going to Jeff Cannonball tribute show in New Jersey this weekend. They got a bunch of those guys on it. So really looking forward to that one.
Did I ever tell you guys I called a Tim Donst match?
Love Tim Donst. You ever see that clip of Brody Lee kicking his face off?
No.
Oh, I got to show you. It might have been the best big boot I've ever seen in my life.
You know who trained with Brody Lee when he was a young whippersnapper up and coming?
Would that be you?
No, Kayla Sparks. Me.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what else we got. What the fuck is... Oh, the Pirates coming back? I think I know... Does that mean something? Hey, do we have anything else we want to talk about?
Everything else was wrestling TMZ this week. Ronda Rousey, blah blah blah. I'm the best. Everybody sucks.
Yeah, she didn't want to wrestle Alexa Bliss. Go fuck
yourself,
God
forbid, Ronda. She wrestled the person that's selling the most merch at the time. Eat a shit.
Yeah, she needs to eat a big shit off of Vince McMahon's coffee table.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
What else we got? Any other little juicy tidbits and things? JJ Rogue making any appearances?
No.
Well, great. Then we suck. Don't forget to join the Patreon. Brundlefly and Double T watched me calling a match for Tier 1 Wrestling with the great Trevin Adams from Evolve. And of course, the next episode of the Rogues Indie Chronicles is coming out on the 15th. That's next Monday, actually. It drops.
Boy, we got a big
tune to us.
We got a big tease for next month's episode as well. Big tease.
All right, well, we didn't get to this month's episode yet, so let's, you know.
They're going to want to come back after this one, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so join the Patreon if you're not a member and all that other happy horse shit. And with that, we cue the music.
This has been a production of the Shining Wizards Network. For everything Shining Wizards, visit ShiningWizards.com. And don't forget to listen to all the great shows of the Shining Wizards Network.
Sorry, I got to do match job tonight. The executive producers, Manny Crozzo and Mike Peterson. Our producers, Kate Hensler, Matt Garifo, High Five Tom, Ryan Schlong, Al Day, Kathy Hummer, Michael Hammond, Keith Parker, David Henry Ballinger, I Dunk Briskets, yes, Briskets and Biscuits, Scott George, Jesse Elwell, and Maley Brock. Kevin, hit me with that good shit.
Diana.
Anybody got any sound effects they want to pretend to make?
Night, night.
Horny, gotta go.
Well.